Hello, this is Linda Strasberg with Interviews and Interactions. I'm glad to have you with us today. I have a guest that is going to really broaden your interest in being empathetic. And her name of her book is An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. She's Suzanne Worthley, and she's an energy healing practitioner, an intuitive, a psychic empath, and she's been doing this for more than two decades. She teaches consciousness studies and energy work, and she offers spiritual tours in Peru and Sedona. I love Sedona. I almost moved there. So let's welcome to the program Suzanne Worthley. Am I saying your last name correctly?
Yeah, Worthley. Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
I'm excited about your book.
Can I jump in though, Linda? The book that's my first book actually, and I really appreciate you promoting the first book. My second book that we're actually talking about is called Confident Empath, and that's the one that's launching this week.
Okay, your publicist wanted me to focus on Energy Healer's Book of Dying, but that's okay. We can go over to the other one because I've been reading that book, The Confident Empath, and it's a complete guide to multidimensional empathy and energetic protection. So that's equally as exciting. So thank you for being with us today and talking about the subject because it has so much interest. I started doing my program 30 years ago, and there was not that strong of an interest in things like we're going to talk about today. But in the last 15 years, people are really interested in these other alternative ways of living on this earth. So thanks for being with us. So can you share with us what an empath is?
Sure. I thank you for having me, by the way. Yeah, this is a very important book to me. My first one I loved also. I launched it in 2020, and The Confident Empath is just launching as we speak here. So being a full-time practitioner, I look at empathing and empathy a little bit different. So the human body is designed to have empathy, which is really feeling what another feels, standing in their shoes. But empathing is different. Empathing means I not only stand in your shoes, but I take your shoes, I feel your shoes, I keep your shoes, and then I become your shoes.
And you follow them.
it's a lot different, and it can actually be extremely dangerous to our health and wellness. So you're right. You know, this subject has not been popular in the past because I, too, have been working close to 20 years in this field. And, gosh, when I started, I don't even think I heard the word empath. And now as a practitioner, people are tossing this around just like crazy. And yet I don't believe that they know truly what it is. So I really thank you for expressing it to your audience.
Mm-hmm. You shared with us just now the difference between empathy and empathing. And I wanted to say a few things about being empathetic. And that I want to go back to that for a moment because we teach our children, and they say if children don't learn to be empathetic at a very young age, they really don't grow it later. So is empathy different than that? Can people learn how to do empathy and be kind of more sensitive to their surroundings?
Well, you actually hit the nail on the head on what the actual book starts out with. The foundational belief systems that we grow up with are really imperative to how we do either empathy or empathing. When we're doing empathy, we teach our children to care about people, to love people, to be there for them, and to show up. And that is a beautiful and wonderful thing. When we extend that, however, in belief systems, which many of us have, and this is not judging anyone, many of us grow up with the concept of you take care of everybody first and then you come last, because that's selfish if you take care of you first. And so this is a flip in the belief system. And when we get older and we have this feeling of I have to take care of everyone else, I have to, this is my job, I need to, I should, all of these words put a different fuel behind it, and it is called empathing because now we're stealing fuel from one another under an umbrella of fear versus empathy works in an umbrella of love.
Okay, back up a little bit on that.
Okay.
It's not really clear to me.
Let's do a real scenario maybe because it will be easier. So
okay.
Empathy, I'm, you know, I grew up in a family and maybe I'm the oldest one and I started a belief system in the family that, you know, I take care of everybody in the family. And then as I, and that's empathy, I'm here, I'm supporting you. But as I grow up, I really nurture that belief system that I have to be the one. So now I have to be the one turns into more, I'm going to worry about you. I am going to constantly be checking on you. I am going to, if you're not feeling good, all of a sudden I'm not feeling good. If you're getting sick, I'm feeling sick. And so we're taking on people's energies more and more and more because we think that we're taking care of them. I worry, worry, worry. Worry is actually stealing the energy of the other person's experience. And worry does not behoove the situation for either person. So it takes that energy in a different twist. Does that make a little sense, Mark?
Yes. So you wrote this book as a sort of, I'm making a summary, so you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. So you wrote this book as a training and to help people so they don't get so drained if they're empathizing everybody around them. That it seems like it would be so draining.
Yes, it's exactly draining. So it is, we call it a complete guide because it does give you very technical step-by-steps on how you can actually turn that energy transferring around. And it is got a lot of tactical things in it as well as some really awesome, cool client stories. So it's a really mixture of information. But I do my best to actually break it down so that you walk away from this book with some really valid tools.
Mm-hmm. It seems like when people find somebody that's good at empathy, they seem to kind of polarize to them and drain them, so to speak. But when they find somebody like that, you get people that latch on to that ability, right?
Yep, because it's very attractive. And the empath will be that one that says, oh, my gosh, everybody tells me their entire life story, even in the grocery store. You know, I mean, that's the empath. They feel like everywhere they go, they're just sucking up everybody's pain and energy. They can't walk through a concert without feeling everybody's, you know, excitement or pain. And it goes on and on. So the empath itself becomes very, very drained because they're not containing their own actual fuel to go through the day. They're leaking, 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 and everyone's stealing, stealing. So it just, it exhausts them, not only physically, but emotionally and mentally.
Mm-hmm. So that goes to a term I want to define, energy transference. If we could broaden that definition and explain why it's dangerous. I can kind of see why it's dangerous, but I'd like to hear you tell why it is.
Okay. The human body, we all think we're the, you know, meat and bone and organ existence, which indeed we are. But in actuality, in energy terms, we have our whole fuel system around us, which is almost like an egg of energy. If we can see a big, huge bubble or an egg that is around and outside of us that holds our actual consciousness information, it holds our fuel, it holds our chi, our prana. Those are all the words that we use in this field. It's our life force energy, and that is existing in the so-called bubble that can interpenetrate into the body but surrounds the body, and it can go out several feet, but in actuality, it's usually a couple feet right around the body. And when the empath is stressed and not containing that bubble, I call it like a gas tank in the book. The way that I teach it is the body is the vehicle. The gas tank is that auric bubble. And when we have a not so great gas tank, rusted, torn, leaky, you know, all my gas is spilling out all over the ground. So that gas is my chi, my life force. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. So I'm walking around with no gas, a really bad gas tank, and I will approach another person, and that person will be able to see that leakage, and I either steal their gas or they steal my gas, or lots of times it's both, and I will be vulnerable to people who are overpowering to me or are controlling or manipulative or gaslighting, but just as bad as people that I worry about you. I want to make everything okay. So we will interpenetrate the two bubbles or eggs around the bodies, will overlap them, and that's what's called the energy transference. So it transfers energy one to another. But this does not behoove us because it technically is not our own chi. And so for a little while, it feels good. But then I just go right back to being exhausted. And I do it again and again and again throughout my day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read so many articles now, Dave, about narcissism and how to recognize it. So what you just shared with me, it seems like a good skill would be to recognize these people that tend to steal your gas or steal your chi and your energy, but sometimes it's too late. Sometimes it wears you down.
Oh, yeah. It's never too late, though, to learn the skill to reboot your gas tank. The book teaches you the warning signals, and it teaches you how imperative it is that you have a self-responsibility to your gas tank, and it gives you the actual tactics to go through the process of your day to be able to discern. This is why we call the energy transference and discernment the skill set. If we are aware of our bubble or our egg, then we know that, wow, I'm leaking or I'm low, and that person does not serve my best interest here in terms of energy, and I learn tactics to not allow that to happen. So, yeah, narcissism is a huge one, Linda, because the narcissist is actually a vampire to that kind of energy. They will suck everybody and anybody dry because narcissism actually comes from a low self-worth frequency within their own chi or life force energy field, and they will steal anybody else's to boot their own selves up, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I believe that being an empath, and you hear about a lot of people that are, they know they are, and it seems like they are helping people. They want to help other people. So I think it's like walking a tightrope, trying to learn the difference between somebody that's an energy that will take your energy and another person that really needs your help.
And that is a really good point. It is a fine line. Now, the empath that is helping people is doing it under the construct of belief systems that are still pressuring them that they have to and they need to. A trained empath will flip that narrative to a fuel that says, I get to because I'm choosing to. So they will still be helping the people, but the frequency that they're holding within them is different, and it keeps their body healthy. So it's all about how you are doing that helping people.
Mm-hmm. So what is collective empathy? What does that mean?
So when we are walking around this planet, we are individuals with our own bubble, our own gas tank, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But every single solitary human is connected mm-hmm. energetically in terms of our soul energy, our chi mm-hmm. as an entire species, our planetary existence, et cetera. And this frequency as a whole goes into what we call the collective field. The collective field resides in the fourth dimension of time and space. It's where we actually traverse when we dream. And so that collective field is like the culmination of everybody's thought processes, emotions, feelings, etc. And what we find with an empath, a sensitive empath, which is a step up, a sensitive empath will really oftentimes feel kind of collective energy. I feel the panic of the world. I feel the fear that is turning throughout, you know, the human world right now. I can feel the sadness of the oceans. I can feel, et cetera, et cetera. So they're in a collective level, which is even way bigger and way higher and much more difficult to discern, because oftentimes no one tells us that this is even a thing. And a collective field of, like, let's say water is very sad. We're polluting our waters. The fish are dying. The coral is dying. And a sensitive empath that is attracted to the water can feel that sometimes, and they will bring a sadness into their body. And yet if they don't have a skill set that says, gosh, this sadness is not mine, I do not own this, if they don't have that skill set, Linda, by the end of the week, their brain will assist them in owning that sadness as theirs.
Mm-hmm. But also, on another perspective of this is, give you an example. The other day I was talking to my daughter, and she's a psychologist, and I was talking to her, and I said, you know, she said, you have so many houseplants in your house. And I said, I have a lot. And I said, the weirdest thing is I can walk past these plants, and I can tell if they're happy or sad. And I asked her, I said, have you ever had that, or am I going crazy? And she said, no, I have that a lot. And when I see somebody cut down a tree, or a tree doesn't feel right, I have trees all around my house, it makes me really sad.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I can see where it can drain you, but sometimes I can't help the tree because it's not mine. Or somebody cuts down a tree, and it literally drives me crazy here in Utah.
Yeah, I know. I mean, right? I lost a bunch of trees. We're in Minnesota, and we have grand, old, beautiful trees. Mm-hmm. And I had a neighbor who cut the tree. You know how there's always that one in the neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. The tree that everybody loves. And she came into a new house and cut that bugger down within a week because she thought it was messy. And my heart was just breaking.
Uh-huh,
it's
awful.
Like, oh, my gosh, right? Oh, so we can feel that. So this is a great gift that you have, Linda, to feel the plants, to feel the trees is a great gift. What you want to do, however, if you choose, is to cultivate that gift to say, yes, I feel the pain of that tree. And then you want to identify it as, but that's the trees. And now, on behalf of the tree, I'm going to move that forward out of Linda's body so that that information of the sadness of the tree or the oceans and the fish or whatever it is gets up to what we would consider the Akashic level, the source level, because we want it out of our body and we want it into the Akashic level. And that's actually what I teach in the second part of the book, is this is where the information needs to end up. And we have not done our job as empaths. We keep that information inside of our body, and then we get sick, and then we die with it, and it doesn't get the information where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Now you've introduced a new concept, the Akashic Records. I'm familiar with it, but I don't know if all the listeners are. So in order to really perk up the knowledge of what we're talking about today, I think that needs to be defined.
Great. Thank you for asking that. The Akash is, there's very many, many, many levels of the Akash. So what we can think of as the Akash is a recording of sorts, if we put it in the 3D terms, like a recording of all the thoughts, emotions, experience, etc. But that recording is done in light, frequency, vibration. So every experience that each individual has goes into the individual's Akashic record. And then that goes to their soul, which carries all of their incarnations, Akashic records. And then we can go even higher into the collective Akashic or the planet's Akashic. So every body of the God Source experience has an Akashic record. And those records keep going bigger and bigger. So we would think of them as smaller libraries, and then the bigger libraries above that. And then the main library, where all the information is stored, in all time space and all multiverses, is what we would consider the Akash overall. And this is where individuals come to in between incarnations to determine their soul path for the incoming. And it's not a place. It is a vibrational frequency that houses the information, and we are all in spirit and in light at this point. But when we get that information back to the Akash, let's go back to that ocean example. If that ocean and that fish and that pollution and that horror is sent back to the Akash, quite possibly that incoming incarnation that is in that particular frequency, learning why he or she is going to come in to incarnate, will get that information. And then when here on Earth, will become that scientist that forever changes the way that we don't pollute our oceans.
Oh, that's interesting. I used to teach a class, number of classes, and I used to teach that our subconscious knows it, remembers everything, has everything in it. And sometimes if we build a lot of files up that say, I'm not good, I'm not worthy, I'm this, I'm that, but in a negative way, when you go to do something or apply something, you pull up, and you have a higher percentage of files you might pull out that are negative. So in that respect, on a personal concept, that would be your Akashic records, right?
Well, that would be files that you are choosing to stay loaded into your personal incarnation's Akashic record. Now, this is called Akash work. You can, which I encourage people to do. Go back through their life. This is why the book starts out with beliefs. Go back through your life and decide for yourself as an adult, do I choose now these learned beliefs, or do I dump that record? Do I delete that program in my personal Akash? Because 9 out of 10 of our beliefs are given to us in utero and in childhood, and they're not ours. And we get these taken on, and then we become them, and then they're our story, and then we feed them. And oftentimes they don't serve us. And so when we go through our personal Akash, when we're alive and well, and clean out anything that no longer serves us as a file, it's like delete, delete, delete on the computer. This is the best way to work the human body, because the cleaner my body is, more love and light can move through it. And then I can be a channel of source energy versus storing all this stuff that no longer serves me. It's like your malware on your computer is losing its marbles because it's trying to find all that garbage all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of putting it. I just had that happen to my computer.
Yeah.
On a larger scale, we have such a lot of negativity and bad energy on this earth, I think, in this generation, in this era. Do we have an Akashic record of the earth, or Gaia, if you want to use that term? Is that building up in a negative way, and how do we deal with that?
Yes, we have many Akashas, so let's break them down a little bit. The actual planet itself is a consciousness body of source. We chose a consciousness body of source that is a human being experience. That energy chose a planetary being experience. So planet Earth, Mother Earth itself, is a consciousness being, and she holds her own Akash. So, yeah, the earth itself is actually purging her Akash. She's dumping files as well. She's going through her process, and that's called the ascension process, of bringing the planetary existence from a 3D frequency up to a 5D, and we hear a lot about this. So what that means is the planetary consciousness itself is what is ascending. It is growing in love and light. It is expanding. It's purging. It's deleting its files, and it's raising its frequency. This is why a lot of the humans on this planet that don't study the process of ascension or energy don't understand that they don't feel very good right now. The frequency of the earth is resonating at a higher level, and that can make us uncomfortable physically, and then we think we're sick, and then emotionally we'll jump on, and mentally we'll jump on, thinking, oh my gosh, something's wrong, I'm sick, and this affects mostly our root chakra, which then ignites our fight or flight and our safe. So this is the process of what's happening. So she's dumping files in a beautiful way, and yet people think this is like, the world is angry, it's cracking up, and it's not. She's beautifully dumping her files that no longer serve her. But this directly affects then the human's Akash experience, individually as well as collectively. So as individuals are riding this wave of ascension, many of them are falling for the programming of, the world's horrible and everything's awful and everything's falling to pieces. Or those that are ascending and doing their journey and their work are saying, actually, it's falling to pieces because it's supposed to. And this is actually progress and movement forward because this no longer serves us. And again, nobody's better. There isn't a better camp to be in. Everyone gets to or not ascend at the process that is happening. And there's nothing to say that this is right or wrong. It just is.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a story, Suzanne, about this process that would explain it a little better.
Let's do the last couple of years have been really difficult in all kinds of things that have happened with our health and wellness. We all know what happened in the last couple of years with health and wellness. And a lot of us got caught up in the wave of, oh my gosh, this is horrible. We're all going to die. This is why it was so hard to launch a book called The Energy Healer's Book of Dying during 2020, because people were terrified and they were angry and they were mad and they were separating themselves and they were isolating themselves. And there was a real beauty from an energetic standpoint of what was happening during that time period. It was called the dark night of the soul. And a lot of us were in isolation because this was an actual spiritual growth time for us to look deep and see what it is that we're doing and what value do we have as a being here on this planet and so forth. So if we could get to a level of love and light, we could see this is happening in a grand way as it needs to from a divine purpose. And we don't have to get caught up in, I can't take a step outside because I'm scared and I'm going to die. And we can even bring this into the political messes over the last couple of years, you know, the separation and you're right and I'm wrong. So people are fighting and angry. And, you know, I live in Minnesota. We had the George Floyd thing. So all of this mayhem that people are seeing is actually the deconstruction of a lot of the things that no longer serve us. It is bringing to light things that no longer serve us. But the problem is, humans still fight each other to be right. Humans still want to be right, and I want to be around someone that is the same frequency as me, because if you're a different frequency, I'm challenged to look at myself, and it's difficult. So all of this messy stuff is going on, but the bottom line is, the more I clear my own container, the more I get rid of all the fear beliefs, the more I work on core values of I am safe, I have self-worth and love, and I am enough and there is enough. If we work on those three things, we start to look at this world like, oh, that's okay that that's happening because I'm actually safe and we're moving forward. And I can work in love and light and paradigm shift every single day. Or on the flip side, I'm going to look at CNN every day and I'm going to have the news on the, you know, national news, and I'm going to be terrified and I'm going to start judging and I want separation and I don't want to be around anyone and now I'm depressed and I don't have any money. And on it goes. So it's the same scenario, looking at it from two different sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of a fear-love kind of perspective, right?
It's exactly a fear-love. You nailed it on the head. The only fuel these creational existences in is fear, which is I can't, I have to, I need to, I should, or love, which is, oh, no, I get to because I'm choosing to. And when we start to take self-responsibility, and that's why this book is critical right now, take self-responsibility on your paradigm. And, you know, we've got a world of social media that's insane out there because we will ride the wave of other people's anger and pain in 2 seconds because we want to jump on and have our own personal retort back to a comment. And it just keeps exponentially growing in anger and fear versus knowing that that person gets to have their own personal opinion, and it has nothing to do with my worth or my value or my faith. And when we get there, the whole world changes.
I love that. I think so many of us, I mean, there's a saying that misery loves company.
And oh, yeah.
Maybe part of that is that people, you know, they do feel so down and out. They want to find other people that are feeling that way. And we like to have our own tribe, and our tribe, we usually expect our tribe to have the same perspective. That's
Linda, remember this. Okay, get this one. Let's have a bunch of ladies out complaining about their husband, or maybe it's men complaining about their wives, who knows. But example, oh, my husband does this. And then the next lady says, you think yours is bad. Mine does this. And then the third one says, you think you've got it bad. And what we do is we one-up each other in misery besides being in company. You know, we're always just trying to be the more miserable. But remember, all of those little interactions, even though they sound and seem harmless and kind of humorous, are really going into that collective field. And remember, that collective field is our individual responsibility as well. So when we are allowing that much rhetoric and stuff, and, you know, our media has not helped. We've got these reality shows that are making us think we have no worth constantly. I mean, I find this in my healing ventures all the time, of people's worth just goes down the, you know, the drain because their entertainment value is things on television that are constantly kicking this one off and kicking that one off, and you're not good enough, and you're not good enough, and we're destroying our worth, and it's purposeful. It's purposeful because if the human has worth and knows how powerful they are, then anything that is dark agenda will not affect them. And that's what this book is about.
Mm-hmm. The book we're referring to is Confident Empath, A Complete Guide to Multidimensional Empathy and Energetic Protection by Suzanne Worthley. I just wanted to get the name of that book out again because I like the title of it, the word confident. Well, how do you acquire that confidence? I mean, I know that's a real simple question, but so many people give away that confidence that they have, and it stops them from moving ahead. It seems like a big roadblock. When you have confidence, it seems like you can go around every roadblock that you can get, if you have that to fuel you. So you use that as your first word. So let's talk about the word confidence.
Thank you for asking that one, because it's the premise of the book. I mean, we can be an empath until the cows come home, but if we're a confident, skilled one, it makes all the difference in the world, because then I am actually really staying clean and clear. The confidence comes from the education and the knowledge. The confidence comes from practicing. It's just like any other sport. Let's take an athlete. You know, I'm a brand new athlete in whatever genre, and I have to practice and practice and practice and practice if I'm going to get to a place where I really own my worth. And I choose to practice. I don't have to get there. No one's making me, because now I'm actually choosing that practice, and I am making that effort because it is that important. And when we get to the place of understanding the discernment process, working that bubble, understanding that I'm present, bringing myself into my feel centers versus letting my head be in charge of everything I'm encountering, this is when we start to build the confidence, because we bring it inside the actual physical body versus allowing everything that's on the outside of the physical body and auric body to be my reality. So the human has been trained backwards. We think our confidence comes from outside of ourselves. But ask any successful athlete or any successful anything, the confidence comes when you bring it inside the body and actually own it.
Mm-hmm. As a side note, I think that very few people like to be a beginner. And especially in this country, we don't like to be a beginner at anything. And I think in order to get that confidence, you have to be willing to be a learner, a beginner. You have to be on that first brick on the yellow brick road. You can't start in the middle. You start at the beginning, and a lot of things that we do in our lives, and I think people are really afraid of that in this country. We're supposed to be a success instantly, and I think that that's taught in the schools too, that mistakes are bad. So
yeah.
I think to make that word confident work, you have to be willing to be a beginner.
Actually, it even gets a little tougher for some people, because those empaths that are out there wearing that as almost like a badge of honor, not knowing actually how the energy works. I've had many, many, many of them in my office. You know, daily I work with empaths, and many of them are just astounded that not only do they have to go to the beginning, but they almost have to go backwards, because they have to unlearn a lot of the learned behavior. And talk about beginning, they're going all the way back to the beginning of their existence to dump those belief systems that have been ingrained into them, like everybody else comes first. You take care of your brothers and sisters. You're the one in charge. All of those things are unlearned when the empath starts to begin the process. And so, yeah, it's tough work, but I'm telling you, it is 110% worth it, because your entire creational reality existence changes.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to touch on reincarnation a little bit. I don't do a lot of religion, but I think it's important that a lot of people in the boomers, especially people in their 50s and older, they're saying, what am I here for? What's my purpose? What am I doing? And so many people, I think, don't understand the continuous process that goes on as we grow and how we clean out the bad and keep the good. And you were talking about that a while ago when you were talking about the Akashic Records, that we have this process, this path, and so many people can't find it.
Right. I cannot tell you how many people sit in my office and they have that wanderlust, sad look on their face saying, I just don't know my purpose. And again, I want everyone to take what resonates during this entire interview and toss what doesn't. But my own personal process of going through my work really allows me to invite the concept that each one of us has an overall purpose of being a vehicle for God's source. Because source doesn't have a body, and we chose to step into an existence to be one of those bodies so that source can know itself. And each of us has all kinds of reasons that we come in individualized for that incarnation. And we call that the book of life, and that's what goes into that Akashic record. And sometimes that process of just being is the overall purpose for us being here. But then when we get deeper into that book of life, I will have allowed myself in between incarnations to determine additional, we call them lessons, and I don't care for that word, but it's good, I'm talking it through. We come in with additional lessons that my own soul has, which may or may not include reincarnation purposes to atone for something or to do something. But reincarnation is changing dramatically right now because of the level of our consciousness on this planet and beyond. Reincarnation was very hijacked for eons on this planet, and it had the human actually enslaved in a, you're the abuser, now I'm the abusee, and I'm going to come back the next life, and I'm going to be the abuser to you, and you're going to be the abusee. And we played this game back and forth, and this was a loop program that was very specific to keep the human's soul squashed and not moving forward on the soul level, because it was a recycle program. And that is what is changing right now. And this is why the empath information is also important, because we want to clean out the belief systems of all of that stuff before we have the death process, so we do not have to go through the recycle program, but continue going through the reincarnation program for our soul to elevate in between lives. So that's two different things, if that made some sense.
It does. You use the word quantum, and a lot of people use that word, and you're using it as far as paranormal empathy. What do you mean by quantum empathy?
The way that the energies are now, when we move, there's three different kinds of empaths. Basically, everyone is a general empath to some extent. Energies move in and out, and general empaths can usually move the energy through fairly well because everyone empaths. But when we get to the sensitive empath, that starts to open up things differently to my senses fully. And then we step to number three, which is the psychic empath. And the psychic empath oftentimes has the ability, because of the level of their psychic skill set, to be able to traverse into other dimensional time, dimensional space, dimensional stuck energies, dimensional information. They have the capacity to jump fields quantumly into other spaces and places and garner information or experiences or energy. And this is really much, much bigger. And it is happening very easy now because our timelines and dimensional fields are getting so much more interspersed now. This is part of the process of collapsing the overall dimensional fields in the ascension. So we are moving through time and space lines so much quicker and easier. So the psychic empath has to be even extra careful because they can pick up a timeline by walking through a building that was possibly 100 years ago and they're not even aware of it.
That's interesting. So what is collective empathy? We've touched on it a little bit, but I'd like to expand on what that is, because I think we all like to connect. And now that we have all this social media and all these ways to connect to other people, people are still feeling isolated. So when you introduce the term collective empathy, it sounds really good.
Mm-hmm. And it can be wonderful and it can be dangerous. So again, the collective empathing happens in the 4D field, which is our dream state, our subconscious, our meditative state, all of when we're daydreaming, all of that field is right in our heart chakra. So we all traverse through that 4D field all the time. It's kind of like what we call the bridge from the physical realm up into the spiritual realm. And we all are traversing in it all of the time in one way or another. So the collective field holds the culmination again of everybody on this planet, without time and space, by the way, in terms of what is happening emotionally. And this is a really awesome place to be able to work with love and light and help it flip from a quotient. Let's see the justice scales, for example. And the scale of fear is way heavier than the scale of love right now. Think of, again, let's go to political things. Oh my gosh, what is happening? Our world is falling apart. Our country is falling apart. What's happening in the world? What's happening with the war? Everything is scary, scary. So that collective fear scale on the justice scale is so heavy, filled with fear. Our job can also be to put into the collective with prayer and beauty and experiences. Yeah, but I see that that's happening. But right now, I also see that there's beauty. Look at those beautiful clouds. I'm thankful for that river. Oh my goodness, I'm safe in my home. I have wonderful grandchildren that are supportive and loving. And we build that collective with an individualized feeling of safe and enough and love. And that's our job, so that collective field is is finding way more positivity, because the way this world works is universal laws of things like the law of attraction. What we really don't want, we're creating as much as what we want. Mm-hmm. So the law of attraction says, what I really, really want, I get. What I really, really don't want, I get. So let's think collectively again. If we don't want to go to war, stop worrying about war 24/7, because all you're putting into the collective is war.
Mm-hmm.
Put into the collective peace. Put into the collective love. Put into the collective freedom and sovereignty and joy. And this is how we work that energy differently.
Mm, I think that's fascinating. When I get in conversations with people a lot, and we're talking about war and peace and all those things that we, you know, groups talk about, I fill out the question, if everybody in the world were like you, would we have a good world or a bad world? And it really gets people thinking about their collective empathy, their collective personality, the way they approach the world, and they ask themselves, how, if everyone in the world was like me, would it be a good world? And of course, we like diversity and everything, but I'm talking about kindness and empathetic and peaceful. I think that we all need to access that in ourselves.
I bet you bring some stuff to the table at a lunch. That's great. That's a great question. I like it. I think it's a beautiful question, and I love the pondering on that. I'm just going to throw a different perspective on it just for yucks, in that I also think it's important for us to honor the fact that our universal time matrix that we live in, the world, the holographic world that we live in, is a polarization of duality. It is dualistic, meaning there has to be a this or a that. It's one of the universal laws of gender. It has to be male. There has to be female. It has to be this. It has to be that. So the goal of understanding the empath book is for us to not fear that there still is sadness or pain or all of that stuff out there, because it has technically a right to be here. However, do I put my focus on that? Do I judge that? Do I try to change that? Do I try to fix that? All of those things are what the empath does. Instead, the empath book that I have teaches you, stay neutral, stay observing. And then I do stay neutral and observe my personal choice of, I do believe this world is a peaceful, wonderful place, and I deserve that, and so do we all. So I believe what you ponder for them is a great thing. I just want to add in that the pain has a right to be here. When Source looks at pain, when Source looks at a person who has a record, a personal soul record down here to go through a cancer experience, Source does not see cancer as a bad thing that has to get fixed or go away. It sees it as an experience that that individual soul chose to experience on behalf of Source.
So, but I believe that everything is cyclical.
Yes.
And I think, let's just say you rise the collective to a higher level of being, there still is that contrast there. There's less being and more being.
Yes.
On a higher level. And I think that can happen.
It is happening, and you're exactly right. And this is the goal right now. The ascension process is yes, there can be duality, but let's get the scales of the quotient different. The quotient of love and light gets to win. And it hasn't been winning for a very long, long, long time. The quotient of dark has been winning. So we are now flipping those scales around. So honoring the duality, but pushing the heck in that direction of the light and the love, super. I mean, that's what we're here to do.
Mm-hmm. So one of the questions that was suggested by a publicist was to ask you to share an amazing and extraordinary experience from your decade of energy work. And I love stories. So can you share with us some of the really unique experiences? And you give courses in Peru, spiritual tours, in Peru and Sedona. I've never been to Peru, but I almost moved to Sedona. So share with us some of those, or one of those extraordinary experiences.
I think one of my favorite ones is the one that I did put in this book, and I will give you a very brief version, and those that have the book can go into the full story. But I was working with a paranormal team in Deadwood, South Dakota, and we were down there for some, you know, ghost hunting, if you want to use those words, which I don't care for. But I had the privilege of meeting a lady that had grown up there. She's the same age as I in the 50s at that time. And she, at age 3 till about 5 or 6, actually was dropped by her mother at a brothel. And so this is like in the very early 60s, there was still an actual brothel in Deadwood, South Dakota, that was actually up and running. And it was in a full building along the way. And she had not been in that building since she was that small age. But she grew up there for quite a few years. And that actual brothel was still in existence from the late 1800s, the early 1900s, all the way through the 60s, if you can believe that, in the same building. And we actually ended up doing the paranormal search in that same exact building that night. And it was insane because this building was completely empty. It was deserted. It was all spray painted and full of garbage. There was nobody in it for a long, long time. And the second that I stepped foot into that building, my psychic skills kicked in. And for whatever purpose, I was gifted a complete holographic tour of what it looked like in the not only 1960s when this gal was there, but even all the way back into the early 1900s and late 18. And it was insane. I could see the paper on the walls. I could feel the carpet. I saw all the furniture. Yeah. It was the craziest holographic quantum jump I've ever had in my life. And when we walked from room to room, we could feel the pain and the agony and the confusion and the domination and the torture and all of the stuff that was happening in the whole timeline. And I had the privilege of talking with this gal, and she allowed me to use her real name. Her name was Lucy. And I had the privilege of working with Lucy on a FaceTime call to see if what I was getting was true. And she was validating everything. It was insane. And then she had the courage to actually come and meet us in person and walk through with me. And it was incredible because she hadn't walked in that building in 50 some years. And she was still seeing and feeling and being a 5- and 6-year-old. It was insane, that the healing that happened that night. It was crazy. So my purpose in putting this into the book, however, was that our ignorance in not knowing energy is this. If that building was sold by a realtor and that building was painted and that building had office furniture in it for a real estate company or whatever, those realtors are sitting in that pain and that agony and that angst every single solitary day without them knowing it, because it was that palpable.
And I, that goes on to say that I'm sure a lot of people can go to a place and sense that. And I just want to give a really quick story here because it's like that. I interviewed a black couple that came from Africa, and they went back to where they held the slaves. The slave traders would hold the slaves in this place before they would take them across the ocean, and a lot of the slaves died there. And they said when they went back there, they got physically sick because they knew that in that soil beneath their feet were parts of a lot of people that had died there in the pain. And they said they felt it. And they said a lot of times, without saying that to the people that were going on a tour there, they would say that, but that people could feel it. The same with during the Holocaust.
Yep.
That people sense that's around us. And on a lighter note, a lot of people say, are you going to move? Because I was talking about moving. I said, no, I've soaked into the walls. Because I feel that. I feel like my house, had soaked into the walls, and that makes it feel more like home. So I think we have this empathetic feeling about our surroundings.
Yep.
That all these experiences talk about.
Yeah, and it can be, like you said, what a beautiful thing to soak into your walls, right? And I can imagine your love and light that's soaked into the walls will behoove the next person that chooses to live there, if there is one eventually. But the pain and the agony of places like in Africa, or what I experienced, are detrimental to people's health. And this is something that needs to get out there as a mainstream concept, because people like, healers like myself that are quantum can go in and clear that stuff in 10 minutes. We don't have to have that happening. It's ridiculous and it's harmful. And this is what the earth is trying to purge also. And so this is happening, and we're being affected by it. And it's time that we start getting a little skilled, in my opinion. So hence the book.
We're getting the top of the hour, actually the bottom of the hour, because it started at 11:30. But I would like to, I offer all my guests a time to talk about something that I may have missed or something that you want to reiterate about this concept. And I always give my guests time to do that. And the name of the book we've been talking about is Confidence Empath, A Complete Guide to Multidimensional Empathy and Energetic Protection. It's by Suzanne Worsley. And then just share with us something you'd like to share that maybe I have missed, and then give us your website.
Okay, thank you for asking. Basically, overall, I just think that every single person on this planet is an empath to some extent, and then the book goes into different levels of it. So this is something that is important for everyone to understand, and also it honors another. So if I'm not necessarily a psychic empath or a sensitive one, and I don't understand why my loved one is always so emotional and you're always taking everybody's feelings on, this book can help find empathy for your other person as well. So it works for everyone to get educated on this, because energy is not going anywhere. It's only changing at a really rapid pace. So this can be a really positive and a really plus for everyone. And so, yeah, thank you for allowing me to say all of that. My other book, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying, which we started out with, also has a lot of energy information on death and dying. Check that one out too. Everything is on my website, which is basically my name. So it's S Worsley. So SWORTHLEY.com. And you can find the book just by Googling on Amazon or anything as well.
Mm-hmm. It is an Amazon, because I always look first. So
great.
Thank you so much for being with us. It's been a very rich interview, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts and your skills with us. And have a wonderful time. We're getting to the Easter holiday, if you celebrate it. And spring is here, so that's good too.
Yeah, back at you from Minnesota. We still got snow, so enjoy yourself, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.